Well, hello there. My name's HW, and thank you so much for listening to the Tone Junkie Podcast, episode 69. My, how far we've come. I'm drinking the chai tea latte today from Starbucks. HW, you're not supposed to be having sugar. I thought you were keto. Well, that fell by the wayside, and I'm actually getting back on. But I actually have been on for the past week or so. But I just had to have a chai tea latte this morning. Coming up on the podcast today, two topics I want to talk about. Jeffrey Epstein, or rather, what Jeffrey Epstein has to do with the Tone Junkie universe. And the Strymon Iridium. I have one. There's a video coming very shortly. I'm trying to make a video that's unique, a video like no one else has made yet on the Iridium. So I think you guys are really going to enjoy that. You're going to look forward, I hope you enjoy that. I'm looking forward to putting that out. Let's get right into it. This is the Tone Junkie Podcast, episode 69. Thanks for tuning in. Let's go. Okay, so I put up a post yesterday, and it was Carlos Santana at Woodstock. Now, for those of you who don't know, Woodstock, 1969 music festival, bunch of hippies, Summer of Love, yada, 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 right? In general, there were some epic Woodstock performances, okay? Obviously, Hendrix is classic. Crosby, Stills, and Nash. There was a lot of iconic performances, but if you ask people today, best Woodstock performance, if you ask the people who were there, they'll say Carlos Santana. So here's the story. Carlos Santana, at this time, is living in the Mission District of San Francisco with his band. They have a unique sort of sound, mixing the sort of Afro-Cuban rhythm with this sort of... not quite psychedelic like Hendrix, but this sort of searing guitar playing that's has a smoother edge to it. Sounds like Santana. And Bill Graham loves them and says, we're putting these kids on Woodstock. And he tells them, you're going to play a festival that's going to change your life. And they say, cool, we're in. Well, Santana, and the story is close to home for me because I grew up in San Francisco, and the Mission District is where my church was. So I've been going to the Mission District once or twice a week from the age of 9 or 10 to the age of like 29. So for like 20 years, right? I know all the restaurants, I know all the places. It's changing quickly. So now that I've been gone for about 4 years, it is changing a good amount, but it's still there. It still knows me. HW still got his roots. So Santana is so nervous that when he gets to Woodstock, he tells Jerry Garcia that he's so nervous that just give me something that'll keep me in tune. No, he says, just keep me in tune and give me something that'll help me play in time. Right? So Jerry Garcia, being the hippie doctor that he was, I suppose, he gives Carlos Santana so much mescaline that he starts kind of tripping out, freaking out, right? And I think at the time, the word had already gotten out that there was bad acid going around Woodstock. So there was a lot of people tripping on acid, having these hallucinogenic experiences. So Jerry Garcia says, well, you know, here, take this mescaline. I never heard of a bad mescaline trip. So Carlos goes out there and basically gives a performance of his life. Now, on top of that, they had a 17-year-old drummer. And if you watch the performance, you get the feeling this is both one of the most well-rehearsed bands you've ever heard, but also a band who has no idea what's going on right now. That's the kind of the feel you get if you watch that performance. high, high level of musicianship. Obviously, they're familiar with each other, and obviously, they're great musicians. They've played these songs a bunch, but this is a completely new experience. If I tell you Santana is high on mescaline, it makes his movements and stuff all the more obvious. And strangely enough, though, here's the thing. You might miss all that because right in front, oh gosh. Ugh. You guys, I'm standing in my office. I'm looking out the window and I just see this Mustang, this beautiful Mustang with big black rims. And he pulled into the parking spot too tight. And oh, he scraped up his rim. Oh no. Oh, he's getting out and he's looking at it. Oh, he's pissed off. He is pissed. Yeah, his girlfriend is just standing around. She doesn't seem as pissed, but I think she respects that he's upset. Oh, that's terrible. Okay, I did that to my car, and I just couldn't be the guy driving around with this messed up rim on this Tesla, so I had to get it fixed. Surprisingly cheap, by the way. Anyway, I bet he could use some mescaline right now. No, okay. listen, what's weird is the whole thing is strange, but what's not even, what you would miss on stage is that these guys are clearly under the influence of some stuff and they appear to be sort of like just searching for music while they're playing this excellent music. It's this weird sort of state, right? And then right in front of them is a naked man holding a sheep. And it's, it really sums up the festival, I think. He's just standing in front of there, holding a sheep. And you just get his bare backside with a sheep standing right in front of the stage, and they're singing Oye Como Va. And there you go. And so I posted this photo, and we put a Kemper stage. Shelley photoshopped a Kemper stage under the photographer's foot. And the caption was something like, Carlos Santana, blah, 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 this unknown band at the time, got this huge push and became iconic at Woodstock in 1969. And then they, but what many people don't know is that the performance was plagued with challenges, including one photographer who accidentally stepped on Carlos's Kemper, thus, you know, throwing him into tuner mode. And I guess here's what's going on right now. If you don't know, there's this guy named Jeffrey Epstein. All these people started saying, I thought for sure you were about to say Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself. Because right now on the internet is this whole thing about anytime there's a paragraph, right, that gets someone reading, you immediately put at the end, Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself. I even saw one that, you know, Homer J. Simpson, the mystery is, what does the J stand for? Someone had screenshotted Homer J. Simpson, and there's an episode of The Simpsons where Homer even, it says Homer J. Simpson, but what's after the J is covered up by a bush, and Homer goes over and bends it over and goes, huh, that's what that stands for. Like, he didn't even know his middle name. But people have screenshotted that and then made the second screenshot to say Homer J, which stands for Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself, Simpson, right? Like the Simpsons predicted this. It's here's the thing. You can look up the Jeffrey Epstein story. He's a guy who was arrested and was on trial and was going to be a witness, actually. He was probably going to testify against some people. People say the Clintons were involved. They would say all this stuff. They say it's this big illegal underground, underage kind of ring thing. Let's not get into it. He had this weird island with a weird-looking temple thing on it. Anyway, they put him in prison. They put him on suicide watch. They take him out of suicide watch back in Gen Pop, and he dies that night. And they say, oh, it was a suicide. Okay, yeah, right. In his cell, his cellmate was actually an ex-cop who, if you just look at him, he looks like the kind of guy who would be a cellmate in, like, an Adam Sandler movie. And anyway, the coroner report came back. This doesn't look like a suicide. This looks like a homicidal strangulation. So everyone's saying it's a cover-up. Epstein didn't kill himself. He was going to testify against some people. Maybe it was the Clintons. Maybe it was the Rothschilds. Maybe something. This is the big thing. But of course, right? no one's actually outraged. Because today, because Jeffrey Epstein is the new Harambe, right? Harambe was the gorilla who got shot, who was protecting that kid, and then they shot the gorilla, and then it was like justice for Harambe. And at first, there's a small group of people who get upset about the issue. And then the internet takes over. And then this thing happens. It works its way from the people who actually care to the people who just like to say something and like to be a little bit in the know. I consider myself one of these people. And then we start saying it so much, so much. And it kind of becomes common knowledge that then when it looks like more people are saying it than not, we start saying it. And then if you asked us, wait, are you being sarcastic? We would have like, we would be like Daria. Right? You might remember the 90s cartoon Daria. Wait, are you being sarcastic? I don't even know anymore. Right? That was like a famous Daria, at least in my mind. That was a memorable Daria experience. It's like, wait, are we being sarcastic? I don't even know anymore. And that's sort of what happens with Harambe and this whole Jeffrey Epstein thing. Are we joking that Jeffrey Epstein was killed? Are we trying to bring awareness to the fact that this is a cover-up? Or is this now just something, is it a meme? It's a type of a meme. And memes are, there's like a hierarchy of memes now, right? There's like the memes everybody knows, right? Like the memes with the pictures, right? Then there's the memes kind of under that are just like memes we all just say, like in our speech, like nobody, colon. And then, you know, like I put this up, winter. Hey, y'all remember fall? Me neither. Like that's what winter, that's winter's attitude. That's become like in the hierarchy of memes. It's not a true meme in the sense that it's not a photo with a caption in the meme fashion, sort of a setup up top and a punchline at the bottom, right? And traditionally, the photo of the meme tells you what the format of the words will be. The photo of the meme gets you to a sort of a topical understanding of what this meme will be about. So it could be the awkward penguin, in which we're going to describe now an awkward situation. It could be the dog in the burning house, in which you state a problem that clearly is tragic or compelling or urgent. And then the dog sitting in the house on fire, drinking coffee, and the bottom payout is the payoff. The setup is whatever the situation you want. The payoff is this is fine. Like a dog sitting in a burning house. This is fine. Like you're reminding yourself that whatever, no matter how bad the thing that you're going through is, this is fine. Not in a good way, but a bad way. So anyway, we've gone full meme. Even Tone Junkie is not safe because everyone started taking this paragraph that I wrote. And by paragraph, I mean, this is long form internet content. I think it had four sentences. And they started saying, I thought I was going to say Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself. And then people even rewrote it. Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself. So there we go. Not even HW and his Kemper tomfoolery are safe from the Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself movement. Save Harambe. Free Tookie. And whatever other cause you're into. Okay, moving on. The Strymon Iridium. Oh boy. Listen, I'm working on a video I'm really excited for. I'm going to give you my complete thoughts on that video. I want to give you a hot take. Here's a hot take on the Strymon Iridium. Man, I can't wait to put out a little teaser post about this podcast because it's going to say HW weighs in on Harambe, Jeffrey Epstein, and a hot take on the Strymon Iridium. I mean, if this doesn't get a million listens. Anyway, the Strymon Iridium. Here's what I got to say. It doesn't suck. It's actually pretty good. It's really good. I don't agree with the people who are so completely blown away. Because it doesn't sound better than the Kemper. It doesn't sound better than the Stomp. It just sounds like really great versions of those amps. I can't say it's blowing anything out of the water, but here's the thing. Why would we expect that, right? If all of us, nothing's coming out that's going to make the Kemper sound bad. Nothing's coming out that's going to make the Stomp sound bad. Nothing's coming out that's going to make the Iridium sound bad. This is it. We have great, accurate digital representations of amps, and we can throw IRs on stuff. We can go direct. Welcome to 2019. Welcome to 2019. So let me say this. I think the only thing wrong with the pedal is the way people are demoing it, mostly. I will say Rhett Schull is not in this group. Here's my thing. Immediately when I turned it on, it's a dry amp. It's a tiny, tiny bit on the stiff side, but I don't care. I can put a compressor in there, and it's not meant to run with no effects. So the Round, to me, sounds deluxe reverb-ish. It really does. Now, I was thrown off because there are so many bad demos of this thing online, so I'm not really sure what anyone was doing, including Strymon. They need to not do demos. Their demos suck. The engineer sitting there with the demo was the best demo they put out. Other than that, they needed to just get these in people's hands. I thought Rhett should have got this pedal first. I would have wanted to see that. If that Rhett Schull video about the Iridium had been on launch day, I think the whole tone would have been different. I really do. The whole tone of the Iridium launch would have been different. But instead, Strymon got all these Instagrammers to sort of do these little takes, and every one of them played the stupidest stuff, the most like dumb neo-soul look at me for 15 second Instagram riff. And it was just like, we want to hear the pedal. We don't want to hear your stupid palm muted double stops, right? Like, I can't hear the tone of the guitar when you palm mute, throw it on the neck pickup of some guitar. Like, it didn't make sense. It just didn't make sense. Anyway, we finally did get the demos we wanted. But here's the thing. It is, what do we really want the Iridium to do, right? We want something to plop on our board. We want something to sound like the amp and to take our drives pretty well. And that's it. That's what it does. But I would say this. I would submit to this thought. I would go, how good does it really even need to be for us to get what we want out of it? Meaning, hear me on this. You're going to throw verb on it. You're going to throw delay on it. It's meant to put, it's not a standalone solution. So it's not meant to be a minimalist pedal board. It's small and takes 500 milliamps, which means it's meant to put on a board. Well, what do boards hold? They hold effects, which means you're going to run it with effects. So I think in terms of what it's saying it delivers on, here's a Fender-esque, a Vox-esque, and a Marshall-esque. And that really is just up to you to choose your own favorite pedal platform. I actually don't even think it matters if this thing does dirt well. As long as it does cleans well, that's where 99% of people are going to use it. The favorite switch, I mean, are you going to turn off your drive so that you could switch to a channel 2 of your amp? Once you start going down that road, it's like, well, why not give me more switching capability, right? I think, honestly, to me, my only complaint, it sounds a little bit stiff. The Vox one wasn't my favorite, but it sounds like a Vox. I think a little different IR would really make the Vox ones come alive. I didn't like the IRs on the Vox ones. That's just me. Everything else I thought was great. I could hear that 412 Mesa cab, which to me isn't great for the Vox sound. Then I went to, they have a 112 and a 212 Alnico. The 112 sounds right to me. The 212 does not. The 212 is too bassy. Alnico cabinets don't sound that way. It's a judgment call when you're shooting IRs. It's basically how do you want to mic them up and shoot them, and that's going to affect how you set up the EQ of the amp. I will tell you this. I tended to notice that all of the, I can't tell if it's the models or the IRs, are all a little forward in the bass for me. And I believe they did that to sort of fight the thin digital comparison thing. But Alnico cabs are not bassy. They're just not. Not in a 112, not in a 212. They're just not that bassy. You ever heard a Vox with a really tight bass on the bottom? No, you didn't. You didn't. And that's the only thing that throws me off about those IRs and the Vox thing is you're listening to some proximity effect. Why does that matter? Well, here's why it matters. I think the one place Strymon missed the boat here was the room reverb to me doesn't make a lot of sense in this. I don't understand why it would be included in the pedal. So let me explain. The room reverb is supposed to give you like a space-ish parameter by which you can not hear the thing direct, but add a little room in so it sounds more like the amp in the room. But that's not what the product is. And that's not what IRs are. And I think it's important to just let things be what they are and not try to make something that fixes everything. Because the room, when you put the room too high, it gets super bloated and not very good sounding. When you put it in the middle, it's fine. But honestly, if you just turn that off and put on any light spring reverb or any light hall, you're fine. The idea that you would take a digital model and then run it through IRs, right? Which, let's break this down. IRs are captures of a speaker through microphones and possibly pre's. So you're listening to a direct sound of a guitar, a direct recording. You're now taking your ear and you're hearing what the microphone... You're now taking your ear and hearing what the microphone would hear at the center of that cone, right? So it's a different listening experience. It's a far different listening experience than having the amp in the room. So I don't quite understand this application of the room parameter. I just don't think it's necessary. And I think it communicates an idea that's not accurate, that your direct tone should be the same as a sensation of having the amp in the room. It shouldn't be. It's not. It's physically different. Let me push into this just for a minute. The amp in the room gives you a sensation of a very large speaker that is usually never pointed at your head, right? It's pointed lower to the ground. And what that means is you have a high percentage of reflection from the room. HW, isn't that the room parameter? No, yes and no. The thing is, you can put some of that back in, but we also turn it too loud. There's also like a dissipation of treble frequencies from the bouncing around the room, right? Treble's the first frequencies to get destroyed. Bass travels further. That's why when cars go by with like loud hip-hop music, you only hear the bass. You can't hear the guy rapping on top of it because it's this rumble. It's the longer wave, the long distance between like peak and valley that has, it actually takes more energy, right? It's a lot of energy. And so to dissipate it is difficult. So that's why bass traps are important in a room, right? Because you got to figure out a way to kill the bass. It's easy to kill the treble. You can a lot of times just do it with a blanket. Any material will kill, you know, the treble. So it's just a different experience. It's a completely different experience of jumping from I'm listening my ear up to the speaker or in the room, right? And those IRs are... It also has the EQ of microphones and everything. So here's the thing to me. You made a pedal meant to go direct. You don't need to add anything that adds back in some feeling of it being in the room. You know why? Here's the other problem. We don't have great IR FRFR solutions. There's so many FRFRs out there, and they all take different approaches that... Look, Mission has one that cuts out a lot of the high end, right? The extra high end, the extenuating high end frequencies. Kemper is going to release one of theirs that's supposed to be in a speaker that's more limited. We've got the Train guys. Oh gosh, they just made the Michael Britt one. Not Trainwreck. Oh my gosh. I have one of their things at my house and their name totally escapes me. Anyway, the ones who have made the tube preamp, right? This is the one where, you know, it's let's put it back through a guitar speaker and get the curve back in the room, right? That's one application. But all of that is just to say, when you start to say this knob makes it more feel like an amp in the room, I go, hang on. That knob can't do everything you need it to do. That knob is not controlling for all the variables people are now going to put this through. One of the biggest differences between playing an amp in the room and playing the playing through studio monitors is you aim studio monitors at your ears. They have an extended high-end range, and you're not used to hearing the amount of high-end coming out of your guitar. And that's why when you put the mics up to you put them in the center of the cone, instantly they're brighter. You move them away from the center of the cone, they start to get darker, right? The same thing's true with your ear. So why would we expect that moving the speaker up doesn't have at least as a dramatic effect as moving a microphone around a speaker cone, right? I mean, it's just logic. If a microphone moving around a speaker cone changes, why isn't your ear moving around a speaker cone changing? And we with microphones, we have a way that's pleasing and not. We say there's a sweet spot and a non-sweet spot to mic a guitar amp with different cabs. Then you add into the fact that we have different ears, blah, blah, blah. And it's no wonder some people prefer something over something else. Every old guitar player I know can't hear high end. Every one of them. They all have bright tone. Can't hear it. So to me, here's what I would have done and what I would still do to just fix the slight problem with the Iridium, because I think it totally delivers on everything that it's promising, except this. This space parameter to me is just it's a solution in search of a problem. We just want a direct sound. As soon as you put a spring or a delay or anything, you don't hear the space parameter anymore. And who's going to use this thing without effects? No one. So that room parameter, I'd love to see on the Deluxe, it's a light spring. On the Vox, it's a light, maybe it's a light plate. And on the Marshall, it's a light hall. That would be very in line with sort of vintage sound aesthetic for those three amplifiers. Because that room parameter is irrelevant. Throw on a light spring reverb, can't hear it anymore. And honestly, I love the Strymon with a small spring reverb. You throw just a small spring and all of a sudden I go, that pedal's awesome. But when it's dry and by itself, it's a tiny bit stiff and we're asking it to be something. How does it sound? Well, it sounds great. But just give it a little help. Give it a little bit, right? Because that's what we would do with amps. Nobody plays a Deluxe dry. Anyway, that's what I would do. I think the real thing here is the pedal has no use when you're not using the digital amp sim. And that's a little bit of the downfall. For me, it's just a little bit of an oversight. Because the pedal has to live on your pedal board. And I think in a realistic use case, in a realistic scenario, how people are going to use this, no one's going to sell their Matchless and buy an Iridium. Right? Nobody's going, is the Iridium better than my boutique amp? No. But people want this as a direct solution. So they want to put it on the board. But right now, the way it currently sits, it's got to take up space on your board, and it's only useful if you're using it direct. What I'd love to see is if there was some way to bypass the amp sim, but still leave some sort of, like, have that room be a spring. And they could change the reverb algorithm in there with a firmware update. If that were just a light spring, it would at least have a use on a board where you're still running into an amp. Or maybe the FET could have been a boost, right? I mean, just anything that would give it some use. Because I think that's the real thing the Stomp has going for it, is I see a fair amount of people using the Stomp as a secondary amp with a real amp or as a secondary amp with a Kemper. Because once you put it on your board, you now have all the options in the world. Do you want it to be the amp sim? Yes. Okay, great. Do you want it to be effects also? Sure, it can do both of those at the same time. Do you not want it to be an amp sim? Yes. Do you want it to do all the effects in the Helix? It can do that. It can be your stand-in Trem, your stand-in Phase, your stand-in, you know, Verb and Delay. And I don't think the Strymon needs, that the Iridium needs to build all that stuff in. I just think some use on the board is better than no use for when you're using a real amp. And I think that having that would cement it on people's pedal boards as, this is great, it's my amp, or it's just a little light reverb in case I want it. Either way, I leave it there. But it helps take up some real estate. Or Strymon could have just been real funny about it, and they could just sell it with an Altoids tin, and you could put that on top, and you can keep your picks in it. Okay, well, we've covered a lot. Jeffrey Epstein, Harambe, Carlos Santana taking mescaline, and now the Strymon iridium. We talked about this earlier, but I'll leave you with this. Jeffrey Epstein did not kill himself. I've been HW. Thanks for listening.